Hey, 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 welcome back to the Touch NBA podcast. I am your host, Darren. So, do you guys want to know how to three times your chances to top-ranked NBA programs? Well, if so, this is the episode for you. I brought on the co-founder of Vantage Point MBA Admissions Consulting, Melody Jones, and we walk through what she thinks are the most important ways you guys can differentiate yourselves from other applicants who also have strong stats, right? Strong GPAs, strong GMATs, strong work experiences. What I really loved about this conversation is not only can you kind of feel and sense Melody's passion for helping her clients, but also all the wonderful questions she asks to help her clients develop their most powerful positioning, their most powerful answers to who they are, what they want, and why. So I hope you enjoyed this episode, and I hope that it stimulates you guys and triggers some new thoughts and ideas of how you can best present yourselves and hopefully encourage you all to do the hard work behind the scenes that makes for the great MBA application, right? So start early on this self-reflection process, because those insights could come at any time, early or later, as you work through your applications. Here at Touch MBA, we really try to help you with school selection, helping you guys figure out which schools best fit your goals well. So if you need help kind of figuring out which schools fit you best, where you would be competitive at, go head over to touchmba.com and we'd be happy to help you out there for free. I hope you enjoy the episode. Let's get to it. My next guest is the co-founder of Vantage Point MBA Admissions Consulting, a well-known and top-ranked admissions consulting firm. I'm really excited to have her on the show because, well, to talk about all sorts of things, but I know that her firm helps clients 3x their chances to top 15, top 20 programs. So that's really what we're going to dig into. And I'm excited that she's on the show. Melody Jones, welcome to the Touch MBA podcast.
Wow, amazing. Thanks, Darren. Thanks for that awesome introduction.
Melody, could you tell us a little bit more about what you were doing before you founded Vantage Point?
Sure. I might even rewind a little bit further than that and just tell you a slightly more involved story, just because I think my background is a little bit unique, but also relatable. And I think for a lot of folks out there that are wondering, do I even belong in a top MBA program? Do I even have what it takes to get in? And hopefully this inspires you to say, yes, someone who took the path less traveled, you know, was able to be very successful in the process. And so can you. I know we were talking about this before we recorded the show, but I actually grew up in France for the majority of my childhood. My father's a scientist. His work took him abroad, and two of my sisters were actually born there. But you know, what was really interesting about growing up in a different country, different culture, was for me, it really laid the foundation for my fascination with people and why they think and act the way they do, right? Because I was always surrounded by people who are different than me, not only the language, but also thought differently and just had different standards of living and of thinking. And for me, you know, instead of judging, it just was a source of infinite curiosity. I was always asking why? And I'll leave that there. And there's a reason why I'm going to come back to this. But I moved back to the States when I was 12. And actually graduated from high school in a teeny weeny little town in Western Virginia with absolutely no clue what I wanted to do. I was fortunate enough to get into a great college. I went to University of Virginia and chose to major in business, not because I had some great inspiration, but really because it seemed practical. And honestly, it was just one of the most competitive majors. And I just got caught up in the hype and was like, all right, let's do this. But that's really where I actually discovered marketing. And that really brought me back to sort of this, in my experience, magical intersection of human behavior and business and the numbers. And so that was really what I focused on. I concentrated in marketing in undergrad. But when it came time for recruiting, I had a rude awakening and realized that marketing jobs right out of undergrad pay absolutely nothing. And this was back in 2005. I had student loans. Everyone was going into finance and making a lot of money doing it. So off I went with the masses and went into the traditional investment banking career path. But then 2008 happened. And my world sort of shattered when my employer, which was Wachovia, was actually one of the first banks that failed during the financial crisis. And this, you know, shiny, glittery world of excitement and work hard, play hard, all of that came crashing down. And it honestly, it brought out the worst in a lot of, you know, a lot of my bosses and the people that I was surrounded with every single day at work. And that was really a wake-up call for me to take a step back and say, okay, is this really what I want for my career in the long term? Am I really on a path that feels aligned with where I am at my best and also surrounded by people that I'm truly inspired to be like? And I just kept coming back to marketing. But I knew that at this point, I'd sort of, you know, I'd had 5 years in finance, I'd kind of pigeonholed myself a little bit. At least that was my, you know, 26, 27-year-old mindset. And I felt that getting out of finance and getting a good marketing role was going to be basically impossible without some sort of springboard or pivot point. And that's really where the MBA came in for me. So decided to apply to business school, started studying for the GMAT. And then at the advice of a friend, I hired an admissions consultant. I didn't even know that was a thing. I didn't even know that was something I was supposed to do. But my friend, who actually was a coworker who had gone to business school and was a post-MBA hire, told me, listen, it's going to make a big difference. You need to do this. It's expensive, but totally worth it. And she couldn't have been more right. I mean, seriously, what a difference my consultant made in my application. I truly don't believe that I would have had the success I had without him. And that's really because the application process was hard. I had no idea what I was doing. I felt like I was sort of feeling around in the dark with a blindfold on. And what he really did was offer that beacon of light, but also push me way further than I would have gone on my own until I'd, you know, taken my application materials to that absolute possible limit of perfection, right? Whatever that meant for me. And I guess it worked because I was accepted to my top choice program. I had a dream of moving to New York. I was living in North Carolina at the time. So dream of moving to New York. I wanted to go to Columbia Business School. And so that's what I did. And I actually ended up landing the exact internship and job that I wrote about in my applications.
Wow.
Which was kind of wild. I like to see I manifested that, but not really. It was a lot of hard work. And that was working at L'Oreal on a global brand, right? Living out that dream of marketing and marketing a brand and products that touch the lives of so many people, not just in the US, but around the world. But once again, reality came knocking. I was living in New York City on a brand manager salary. I'm pretty sure I was probably the only one of my classmates that took a pay cut post-MBA. And I just wanted some extra income. And so I actually reached out to the firm that I had hired when I was applying to business school and just asked if there's an opportunity for me to work with them part-time. You know, I liked the flexibility that admissions consulting work offered. And I realized that my clients were probably also all going to be working full-time jobs. And so I could work with them in the evenings and on the weekends. So they took a chance on me and I just fell in love with the work instantly. It allowed me to connect with other people who are facing similar challenges and uncertainties that I did. And I was able to be that person that helped them come out on the other side and be successful. And that's a blessing, but it's also like such a magical, you know, empowering experience. And I guess I like to say the rest is history. At that point, I was hooked and there was no going back.
Wow. So how long have you been in the industry, including your part-time work?
Yeah. So 10 years this year.
10 years.
Yeah.
And why did you decide to start your own firm? You know?
Yeah. Yeah. No, great question. So I'd been working, you know, with this other firm part-time for a couple of years when another admissions consultant, who actually happened to also be a close personal friend of mine, approached me with the idea of launching out on our own. And it was really fortuitous because it was something that had been kind of percolating in the back of my mind. But like, I don't know, I'm not really an entrepreneur. I really want to kind of give this L'Oreal thing my full attention and you know, give it the best shot I can. I don't know if I can do that and try to start a company. But ultimately, it kind of was a no-brainer. I probably was always going to say yes and just gave myself reasons and excuses not to initially. But and the reason for that is that I loved what I was doing. But as I gained more experience, right, and just gained those reps, I really started to develop my own consulting style and approach, of course. And I realized it's increasingly divergent from the firm that I was working with. Found myself kind of creating my own resources for clients and kind of deviating from the path that had been laid out for me. And so that's when I knew that, okay, this is probably the right time to take what I've learned, take this great experience, take the relationships I've built, of course, too, and start our own practice. So that was the origin.
So, you know, as someone who has kind of helped people as well as an admissions consultant, I'd love to hear how you guys try to differentiate yourselves, you know, because there's a lots of other great admissions consulting consultants.
Absolutely.
And consulting yeah. companies, right? So
100%.
So what do you yeah. think your difference is?
Yeah, it's such an important question, because I would say the admissions consulting landscape is even more crowded and competitive than it was when we launched back in 2016. But I think for us, what it really comes back to time and time again, and this is today what I'm still extremely passionate about, is, you know, that I believe that a human-led approach, right, a person-led approach is just far more effective than having an application-centered approach in the admissions process. And what I mean by that is, instead of diving straight into the tactics, right, where will you apply? Who are you going to select for your recommenders? What are you going to write about in your essays, right? And starting to check down that to-do list, right, in a very project managey kind of way. We start with the person, get to know them, and first help them discover and understand their goals, what got them there, and then, of course, how an MBA will help them achieve them. And only once they have that foundation can we then apply that to the mold, which is the individual MBA applications and the application process overall. And you know, what I've seen time and again is that doesn't only make stronger applicants, but it actually makes better prepared students, right? Because they've done MBA students, they've done the work, they know exactly what they want to go after. So when they arrive on campus on day one, they're not like, okay, so let me really figure out why I'm here and what I want to do and what I'm interested in. They've already done that work ahead of time, and they can hit the ground running.
Absolutely. And you guys focus on the top 15, 20 schools in the world?
Yep, that's right. That's right. So I would say the majority of our clients are really applying to the top 10 in the US and yes. in Europe. But yes, as a sort of overall universe, we focus on the top 20 programs. That's really our sweet spot. And that's the experience that our team has across the board.
Okay, well, I really want to, you know, bring in some concrete examples, right, to discuss
yeah.
how you do this human-led approach. Doing my own research on you and your company, what really stood out to me was kind of how you guys have a track record of 3x-ing applicants' chances to these top 10 schools, right? So
yeah.
Just to kind of sum up what you have on your site and for our listeners, because they can't see it, I think your typical client that you work with has around a 720 GMAT versus mm-hmm. the top 10 average of 729. Your typical client has a 3.5 GPA versus a top 10 average of 3.6. And your acceptance rates are 60% plus versus 16% for the average at the top 10 programs. Just so, you know, I want our listeners to know, when you say 3x success factors, those are still some pretty strong GMAT scores and pretty strong GPAs. But of course, those are averages. Let's talk about what you think those success factors are.
Yeah. And just to that point, before I go in there, you know, what's wild to me, and the stat, this is actually a stat that we share on our onboarding email with every single person that reaches out to schedule a consultation with us. And that stat is that 75 to 80% of the applications that the top MBA programs receive are qualified on paper, right? That means that those are people that meet the prerequisites, that are within the range for the GMAT and GPA. Right? They check all the boxes on the surface. And when you think about the size of that applicant pool, right, and the number of people that are actually going to get accepted, it's really about way more than just bringing it on the academic side and on the stats side, right? You got to bring the full package. And that's really the sort of the genesis, right? And the secret sauce, if you will, for the 3X success that we experience and what really drives our process.
So let's get into it. What do you think, like, you know, if you were to take a step back, well, let me first ask you this. Why the name Vantage Point?
There's
always an origin story with these names, right? I have mine and I'm sure you have yours.
No, absolutely. I think, you know, we spent a lot, like way, way more time than we probably should have trying to find the perfect name for this company. And I think ultimately for us, it was really about kind of being up on that mountain, right? We've scaled the mountain already and we have the benefit of the vantage point from the top, looking down, helping you succeed in the journey that we had just gone through, and it successfully helped other people go through as well. So it's really about sort of gaining from our perspective, gaining from our experience. We have a vantage point that we've learned and earned, and we want to share that with you to help you experience the same success.
Love that.
Yeah.
Love that. Okay. So yeah, what do you think is the biggest factor, one way that applicants can differentiate themselves outside of their stats?
Yeah. It's funny. You mentioned on your excellent advice for living episode that we were talking about before we hit record on the show that, and you said the most successful applicants are the ones who know what they want. And that really, really resonated with me because I couldn't agree more. But I think I'm actually going to take that a few steps further and assert that the most successful applicants know who they are. They know what they want and why. And those three things are really what I believe to be the foundation of our process and what you would call the success factors, right? They all exist together. They really can't exist independently, but all three are really essential for a strong, compelling, competitive application.
So let's start with the first one.
Yeah.
Who they are. I mean, this has always been such an interesting question for me because obviously the MBA is a very transformational program, but you're kind of asking for applicants to know who they are, what they want to get out of the program, but yet you're also asking them to be open to change and perhaps going directions they may not have even considered before, right? So how do you advise your clients to get a better grasp of who they are and to express that?
Yeah. Let's start with maybe some of the preconceived notions or myths that you mentioned around who they are, right? Because I think that the who they are piece has a lot of different synonyms in the industry, right? It can be personal branding, it can be positioning, it can be your story, it can be all these different things. But at the end of the day, it really does boil down to knowing yourself and having that self-awareness. And self-awareness doesn't mean that you are fixed, that you are constant, you're not allowed to change. Whatever you are today has to remain into perpetuity and it's fixed forever, right? But it does require self-awareness, self-reflection, and a strong sense of this is what I stand for. And maybe this is what I don't stand for, right? Mm-hmm. I like the word personal branding, because I think everyone understands what a brand is, even if you can't really define it, you just know what that means, right? A brand stands for something. It knows what it is, it knows what it isn't.
Yes.
And so that's really what I'm challenging my clients to get clear on is, you know, don't stand for everything because you're going to be completely forgettable and stand for nothing, right? You want to have like a thing or a couple of things that are really distinct to you that you've taken beyond the bare minimum that have been defining of your personality, of your perspective, of your experiences, of your skills. And how, of course, is that going to be relevant to an MBA audience whose job is to shape a dynamic and diverse class?
Yeah. So how can someone express what they stand for in an MBA application?
Yeah.
I mean, it sounds like a basic question, but it's actually not so simple.
No, it's not. I mean, I think you first need to get clear on what that is, right? And then find the stories within your experience and within your background that bring that to life, right? Like I'm just going to name a few examples of brands or, you know, things that people stand for as applicants, right? You could have the woman's equality and finance warrior, or, you know, the connector who bridges differences to unite others around a common goal, or maybe you have a bold initiative taker who solves problems that other people had shied away from in the past. And you know, those are repeated themes that has either been the driver for someone's decisions or the way that they've shown up in multiple different situations. And then as you start to tease out the different stories or experiences from that person's life and career that support the theme, all of a sudden through that repetition, you start to define and clarify the picture of the brand and get clear on who that person is.
I love that. So do you think the brand has to be tight? I mean, it has to be one noun, so to speak. Well, an adjective and a noun, right? Essentially. Versus, okay, yeah. I can be, you know, the really analytical marketing person plus, I don't know, like team captain leader, you know, I'm just throwing out something at the top of my head.
Yeah.
Do you think that's too hard for people to remember?
You know, nobody is like unilateral, right? People have multiple facets. And if there are two like equally competing factors or forces within your life and within your experience that need to live together in order to paint the full picture, I think that works. I think you got to be specific. And once you start bringing in three things, four things, five things, then you're just muddying the waters. And again, you stand for nothing. But I think sometimes bringing that contrast between two things is actually very differentiating and can really paint a picture of a distinct point of view.
I mean, do you have an example at the top of your head of perhaps a client you worked with that struggled with this part of the application that you helped?
Yeah. I mean, honestly, everyone does. You know, everyone does. I think it's really, really hard, particularly as a 20-something-year-old, right? You've been on the go since college, probably before college, starting in high school. It's just been go, 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 one achievement after the next. And I think it's really hard to take a step back and actually think back on like, well, why did I do that? Or what was I really thinking? And how did that lead me to act in a certain way? So I think everyone struggles with that to some extent, some more than others, but that's really the space that we give to our clients, particularly at the beginning of any engagement, is to do that self-reflecting work, right? And to ask those tough questions. And sometimes hindsight really is 20/20, right? You might not have realized something at the time, but looking back, you're like, ah, now I get it. But I think, you know, all of our clients struggle to some extent really knowing what their point of differentiation is. And more importantly, and this is kind of the next topic that we're going to talk about, is where they want to go next. And how do you bring those two together? I think some clients, I'll walk you through kind of a specific example of a particular client, and then you can kind of jump in with any questions. But we had a client I worked with a couple of years ago who came to us saying, listen, I am plain vanilla. I am, you know, a dime a dozen in my industry. Everyone from my industry is applying to business school. I kind of have an idea of what I want to do, but again, that's not differentiated either. So I really need you to help me stand out and help me figure out what I stand for. And so, you know, for him, we talked a little bit about work experience, but pretty quickly we shifted the conversation and said, okay, let's talk about personal, right? Your work experience, it checks the box. You know, he'd worked at a rating agency for a few years. He'd worked at a bank before that. Pretty standard career progression, and everything was sort of average, right? Average GPA, average test scores. And so as we started exploring more about his personal background, I learned more about his experience as an immigrant to the U.S. He'd moved here when he was 9, faced, you know, language barriers and challenges around assimilating into a new country when you're that age, and really how that experience shaped his values and outlook. But even more than just the personal challenges he faced, he was very deeply impacted by the sacrifices that his parents had to make in order to come to the U.S. and create and build a better life for him and his sister. And he had a deep sense of gratitude for the sacrifices that they made. And he very much in his own life subscribed to that philosophy, right? That you have to make the tough decisions now. You have to do the hard work now in order to have longer term payoff. And sometimes it's not even payoff for you, it's payoff for the next generation. And that had really been a consistent theme in some of the career, in the career choice that he made, some of the projects he pursued when he was at the rating agency. But then also as he was looking forward and wanting to work in investment management, we started to put the pieces together and say, okay, how does that long-term lens apply to moving to the buy side and working in investment management? And so he realized that, you know, actually focusing on ESG investing, which is environmental social governance investing, would allow him to marry those professional interests and his values and bring that together. And so that's really where he shaped out his, you know, his goals essay, for example, applying to Columbia, they have that 500 word, you know, tell me about your career goals essay. And he spent a lot of time setting the stage and talking about his experience with his family and how those values shaped that career decision, like I talked about earlier. And then ultimately the how that was informing his outlook going forward.
I love that. Thanks for sharing that example.
Yeah.
How long are those conversations you had with this client?
Like, oh man,
I'm just trying to get an idea, you know, just so our listeners can know like the process.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, hours. And it wasn't all at once, right? It was a series of phone calls. We do have a structured exercise that our clients work through to start kind of getting the wheels turning on that introspection. And that serves as the foundation for the conversation. You know, but ultimately, I would say this was probably a series of like 5 or 6 1-hour coaching calls that we had up front. And then as the process moved along, you know, sometimes these things morph in shape, right? As you start answering specific essay questions, or as you have an insight that comes to you later in the process that might help you, you know, mold things a little bit differently.
I mean, for those listeners who might not be able to work with an admissions consultant this round, could you leave them with 1 or 2 questions that you think are really helpful or that you've seen to be very effective for helping applicants?
Yeah. I mean, you know, I think one sort of piece of it, when you look back and try to figure out, okay, what do I stand for? Right. And that's a particularly important exercise if you're applying to Harvard or Stanford that have these, you know, very personal essay questions. An exercise that we always go through with our clients is having them take an inventory and make a list of all of the most like impactful, influential, and kind of inflection points in their life. And all starting from the very beginning, right? Like moved to France when I was 5 and then moved back to the US when I was 12, you know, moved from X to Y, you know, whatever those situations are, right? Like my parents split up and I had to move, et cetera. All of those key inflection points. And then look back and try to determine what are some of the themes or common threads that are tying these, that are tying these experiences together. And that will help you. And ultimately you're going to pick one, maybe you're going to pick 1 or 2, but starting broad and narrowing down and trying to find the commonalities is a really important exercise to help you get that specificity on the what first before you dive into the why. So that's one, but I think the other question that I always ask my clients that I absolutely love, and this is more related to sort of the post MBA goals and vision development, is who do you want to be a hero to?
Love that.
Who do you want to be a hero to? Because that really, even when someone comes back to me and says, you know what, I want to work in management consulting. Like, okay, great. That, you know, that is a step, but that's not a goal. And so really thinking about, okay, but who will you be serving, right? What is the impact you want to have? Once you start asking those follow-up questions, then you're turning a tactical step into a vision.
I love, I have some thoughts on both those questions. Like the second one I really love because it helps the applicant kind of step out of themselves. Right. For a second. It's very easy when you're applying for an MBA. It's like, it's all about you.
I mean,
you're the one who's going to be paying this huge tuition fee and you're the one who's going to be moving across the world and you're the one who's taking the career risks, of course. Yeah. Right. But I think that question of who you want to be a hero to, who do you want to serve, or which problems really concern you? Which populations do you want to serve? That's the way I would phrase it. But I actually like how you make it much more personal. Like, who do you want to be a hero to is much more personal. Yep. I think that's a great question. And then with the inflection points, I found that oftentimes it is like the move to a new country or maybe a new company. But sometimes for me, I feel the inflection points can be from maybe smaller events. Like maybe it's 100%. Something a lecturer said, or, you know, some guy working in your house, something happens with that guy. I don't know. Yeah. I mean, it's just, it could be little things that lead to aha moments. So,
you know, you lost that championship game, or, you know, something that, you know, was emotionally charged.
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly. Yeah. Cause that's where I was getting at. Cause I think that to me is what transfers in your stories when you're both telling 100%. Them in person and when you're writing them, is that emotion. And that is what's going to spread to your reader, to your listener, right? Yeah. To who's interviewing you. So I think those are awesome questions. Like,
totally.
So in terms of what they want to do, in terms of their goals, I have a few more specific questions I'd like to ask.
Okay.
So one is, like, how specific do you guys recommend your clients get with those post-MBA goals? Is it kind of, okay, this is what I want to do right after business school, and this is what I want to do 5-10 years down the road? Is it more directional and vague than that? I would love to hear your thoughts on that.
Yeah. No, that's a great question. And it's interesting because I think MBA programs have different philosophies about this as well. And so sometimes even the same applicant might take a different approach in framing up their goals for different schools. But my recommendation and the process that we go through with our clients around career goal development and vision development is a balance. It is a balance between specificity and being visionary and being ambitious. I think short-term goals, you do want to be specific, right? I mean, business school admissions committees are not particularly, you know, risk hungry. They want to feel like, okay, this person's goals are achievable. Our school is positioned to help them achieve them. And this candidate is going to be competitive in that job market and attractive, of course, to the recruiters. And so specificity in, around short-term goals is something I really push my clients on. But around longer term, you know, I don't like to put a time limit on it. It can be 10 years, it can be 20 years, it could be less than that. But for me, it's really about what is that sort of that vision, that North Star, what is that compass pointing towards that is going to feel like success to you based on what you know right now and based on what you're passionate about, based on that, right, that personal brand that we developed, or that, you know, that thing that you stand for, those qualities or that vision. And how does that drive you in the impact you want to have in the long term? And that one is very much outward looking, right? It's not as much about, I want to be the CEO so I can leverage my leadership skills, right? It's more about how can I, you know, drive change or help solve a problem or capitalize on an opportunity in a unique way based on my experience and skills.
A lot of great tips there, guys. I hope you rewind that part and play it back. On the school-specific aspect, how you think some business schools are looking for slightly different things, because I know you guys, a big part of your process is putting your clients in touch with students, recent alumni, people that have worked at those schools.
Yep.
Do you think it's really a big factor? I mean, frankly, like if you have those things you just mentioned, like the North Star, the concrete short-term goals, and I'm applying to Harvard, I'm applying to Duke, I'm applying to MIT. Like, do I really need to I mean, aside from the offerings these schools have, right, and how that matches those things, do you think there's things that applicants really need to do specifically for those schools?
You know, I think your goals are what they are, right? Like, I don't recommend customizing your goals. Like, telling one school, oh, I want to be an entrepreneur. And then the other school, like, I want to be a management consultant, right? That is just a recipe for disaster. But I do think the amount of real estate that your goals take up in your overall application and how much they're an emphasis in your story and in your application materials, once again, very much does depend on the school and, you know, what sort of their outlook and approaches to the admissions process, but more importantly, how they're thinking about prospective students and their post-MBA goals. And I'll actually kind of give you an example of what I mean for the three schools you mentioned. So
that'd be great.
I would say of the three schools, like Columbia is absolutely the most pragmatic around career goals. I mean, they have an entire 500-word essay dedicated to describing your post-MBA goals in detail. Like to say they care about your goals and how you've thought about it would be an understatement. And they really want to see it's not just about the what, right? It's about the why and what do you want to accomplish and how does that play out in 3 to 5 years and in the long term, right? And so, you know, that is very important for CBS. And when I do rejected application analyses for CBS, for applicants that otherwise, you know, don't have any glaring issues like GPA or GMAT or anything like that, it's because their career goals were way too big or they weren't able to articulate a clear fit for CBS. So CBS, you know, I would say absolutely you want to be as specific using example companies, example title names, right? Like down to that level of detail. You know, MIT Sloan is it's a very different application, right? It's much, much, much shorter. You have that cover letter and that 1 minute video as part of the initial application. And Sloan admissions committee or admissions reps have actually stated time and again during their info sessions and in any of their communications that they're actually not that concerned about what an applicant wants to do post-MBA because they feel like that person's goals are going to change anyways. So they're much more focused on the who you are part of kind of that 3-point success factor that we talked about. They want to know kind of historically, how have you proven yourself to be a fit for our program? And maybe a teeny weeny little bit about, okay, how is our program going to help you achieve your goals? But that's really not what we're focused on here. HBS, I would put somewhere in the middle. A lot of times my clients are not talking about their career goals in that main HBS essay, but you still want to somewhere in your application, whether it's in the application short answer or wherever it might fit elsewhere, to touch on what your vision is for your career longer term. And that one, it's very much around, you know, what is your vision for yourself as a leader? That's how I always frame it. And that's just because of HBS's emphasis on leadership, right? And viewing themselves as the premier educator of game-changing business leaders in the world.
Wow. I mean, that's a whole nother podcast talking about what you guys learned from people who didn't get into those programs, which I think is fascinating and which you might not want to share. But I think that's like, my ears perked up right away when you said that. Do you think like Harvard and Stanford are just harder to get into than the others?
100%.
I mean, because of the numbers, right? I mean, what else is there
Absolutely.
To say, right?
I mean, yes, 100%. But it's also because those essays challenge applicants to do the hardest thing. Honestly, writing the GMAT is probably way easier than sitting down and writing about what matters most to you and why. I think 100% of applicants would agree with that. And doing that well is tough. And I think sometimes people, you know, just can't get there, or maybe they misunderstood the assignment. Or even, you know, of course, sometimes people that did write great essays ultimately don't check the boxes in the other areas, you know?
Yeah. Well, let me ask you about one more school, Stanford. Like, what do you think they're looking for?
Ooh. I mean, Stanford is all about visionary change, right? Independent thinkers, people that break the mold and have a proven track record of doing so. But at the same time, have that sort of balance or prioritization, I will say, of EQ over IQ, right? EQ over profits, really caring deeply about others and the impact you have on others and being able to rally and influence others, right? Ultimately around developing a solution or bringing about an outcome that's for the betterment of all, not just the betterment of one.
Do you guys have these resources on your website about what each school is kind of looking for? Or is this all in your head?
Well, a little bit. It's funny. A lot of it is in my head. We do have proprietary school guides that we share with our clients exclusively. But I'm actually in the process right now of building out school level resource pages on our website where folks can go and sort of get the download of everything they need to know for each school's application process and things like that. It's been sort of a long time in the making, but we hope to have that live later this year.
Great. Yeah. So I'll definitely link to your site, of course, so that our listeners can learn more.
Great.
With one more question on the goals. So your short-term goals, and I completely agree, should be concrete and specific. But if you look at most business schools, I mean, it's like consulting, finance, tech, and then other stuff, right?
Yep.
And I'm wondering if you can share, well, it's kind of a two-part question. The first is, like, what if I just want to be a management consultant or an investment banker or, I don't know, product manager, right, for a tech company? So probably very popular choices. But it's just like, well, everyone else is doing that too. So I have a question. Well, let's start there, and then I'll ask my second one after.
Yeah, no, absolutely.
Because you did that, right? I mean, in a way. Well, I guess no.
No, not the consulting, but you know, a lot of applicants. I put applicants in two buckets, right? One where their kind of immediate post MBA goal is basically putting themselves on that kind of straight shot ladder to where they want to go ultimately, right? So that would be the person that's like, I want to join like an MBB consulting firm, McKinsey, Bain, BCG. And I see myself as a lifer, right? Like I want to be a lifelong consultant and, you know, end up as a partner, whatever. And then you have the other folks that are saying, you know, my long-term vision is this, but it's not really realistic for me to expect to do this right after business school. And so I view, you know, consulting, banking, whatever, as like an intermediary step that's going to give me the experience, the network, the skills, the credibility, whatever, to actually achieve that longer term goal. And either one is fair game. I think no matter which path you're carving out for yourself, what it really comes down to is the why, right? If you tell me I want to, you know, join a consulting firm and I want to stay for the rest of my career, okay, let's talk about that. Like, what does that look like? What is exciting to you about that? Who, going back to my question, right? Who do you want to be a hero to? Is it about, you know, what problems do you think that consultants uniquely solve? You know, which client base do you want to serve? What is really driving you behind this mission? And really bring it to life that way. So the story isn't really the what, their story is really the why and what you actually hope to do once you've landed in that position.
I love that. I know our time is running short, so I'll just ask one more question, which is, what do you wish more MBA applicants knew or would know about the process to help them, to help them improve their chances?
We should have another hour for that question. but no, I think, you know, I'll leave sort of two pieces of advice here. You know, I think number one is just start early. Give yourself time. Don't procrastinate. It's funny. I was on a client call yesterday and we're on like draft 4 of her Stanford essays right now. And she told me, she's like, you know, when we had the intro call and you told me that maybe we could even go up to like 14 or 15 drafts of my essay, I didn't believe you, but now I understand. And so the process is iterative. And those insights are not like a giant light bulb moment that comes crashing down at you on one moment and the rest is just smooth sailing. It happens in these like micro moments along the way. And sometimes not when you're sitting at your computer staring at that blank screen, but maybe when you're, you know, out on a jog or walking your dog or, you know, whatever those kind of off moments can be, and giving yourself the space to have those insights and to come back the application process with fresh perspective every time is going to result in better materials. And you just need time for that. You can't just bang it out in a weekend because that's all you've got. Not that you can't, but it will be very difficult and you'll probably be missing things. I think the other piece of advice I would say is just, when you sit down to write, I know that applicants are so focused on like, I want to showcase my leadership. I want to showcase my impact. I want to show the play-by-play of what I did and all the amazing things that I accomplished and my analytical prowess, et cetera. But really the why is way more important than the what. And so getting comfortable writing by showing what you were thinking, showing what you were feeling, and really like drawing that cause and effect connection in your writing and in your stories is not only makes for a better essay, but helps you be more memorable and relatable as an applicant, and ultimately helps the AdCom picture you as a member of their community and a member of their class. And with differentiation being such an important part of the admissions game, you're really setting yourself up to win in that paradigm.
Wow, two great tips. Melody, thank you so much for just sharing all those great questions that our audience can really think about, and all those examples to help them as well. I really appreciate it. You guys can find Melody at Vantage Point MBA Admissions Consulting. I'll link to her consulting firm in the show notes. So thank you so much, Melody. I really appreciate it.
Thank you so much for having me. This is a pleasure. My favorite topic to talk about. So thank you again so much.
Yeah. All right. Thank you. Thanks for listening to the Touch MBA podcast. Remember, you can get free school selection help and a profile review at touchmba.com. You can also follow us on LinkedIn and Twitter. Just search for Touch MBA.